Welcome to David Maister's Business Masterclass, a series of advanced business seminars exploring principles and practices for success in professional businesses.
Hello, I'm David Maister. In this last seminar in my strategy series, The Courage to Manage, I will summarize the lessons of the series and discuss what managers must do if they are to cause their organizations to operate strategically. As I reported earlier in this seminar series, the single biggest barrier to implementing strategy is managerial courage. What makes super successful companies and managers so impressive is not what they are doing, but the fact that they are doing it. The real difference between the average company and the superstar businesses I have seen is not that they preach standards or strategies that are different from their competitors. They just live up to those standards. And the reason they do is not found in clever systems, but in the strength of the convictions of the individual managers who run those businesses. Many people do not believe that their leaders truly want them to act strategically. Whenever there's a choice to be made between strategy and short-term cash, and there always is, most people in most organizations feel under significant, if not irresistible, pressure from management to go for the cash. They believe that the message from company leadership is clear. Strategy can wait for tomorrow. Rather than company leadership being a source of encouragement to stay the course and pull off the strategy, management all too often are the biggest obstacles to the implementation of strategy. The courage to bet on the articulated strategy, even when it is management's own, is almost entirely lacking in many companies. Many people believe that you can rely on reward systems to encourage the implementation of strategy. This is rarely true. Take, for example, a strategy of excellence in managing people, an approach to doing business which is ardently preached in most companies, but rarely enforced. I was speaking with one of my clients who said, "Well, we pay attention to it. It's one of our key strategies. We reward those people who do it well." And I asked, "And what do you do to those people who don't do it well?" The response was, "Well, we just don't reward them," he replied. "We pay them less." "In other words," I concluded, "you allow them to carry on as before, but you just pay them less." "Well, yes," he said. I carried on. "In other words, they don't have to do it if they don't want to." "I suppose not," he said. "Then how many people are achieving true excellence in this area we are discussing?" "A few," he said. "So you're not actually achieving company-wide excellence in this area?" "Not really, I suppose," he said. The lesson is clear. To make something happen, it's not enough to reward those who choose to participate. You must tackle those who do not. As long as it's optional, even if it is rewarded, it isn't going to be done at the level at which a strategic benefit will kick in. The manager asked me, "Are you really saying that I need to speak with all those who aren't doing it?" And I said, "Only if you want the benefits of your declared strategy." I said, "I'm not suggesting that you play boss or cop or Attila the Hun or dictator. Go remind them of why you chose that strategy. Help them, encourage them, give them some tools to make it easier. Set targets for small improvements that at least will get them on the virtuous path. But whatever you do, don't ignore them or leave them alone. It cannot be a standard or a strategy in your company if there are no consequences for non-compliance." He replied, "But it would take an enormous amount of emotional energy to do all of that," he said. "Welcome to the wonderful world of managing," I said. It is the manager's job not only to manage financials, but to inspire, cajole, exhort, nag, support, critique, praise, encourage, confront, and comfort as individual people and groups of people struggle to live their work lives according to high new standards, known as the strategy. Of all the qualities required of managers, the most essential is courage, the courage to actually enforce the standards that are preached. The single biggest problem in the implementation of strategies is, as I've said, the absence of consequences for non-compliance. If the manager doesn't have the courage to tackle the individual who's not behaving in accordance with the strategy, then all the other people will quickly realize that the new strategy is not something you have to do, and they will quickly cease striving to excel. And thus, the benefits of the strategy will never be obtained. The single question remains, what is the manager going to do about the non-compliance? Inside the firm, hundreds, if not thousands of eyes are watching closely to see if the announced strategies are real or are discretionary. What is often underestimated in these situations is that the problem of the non-conforming person is not his or own non-participation in the strategy, but the adverse effect that he or she has on the motivation of others to participate in the new initiatives. Afraid to intervene, many managers wait until the problems become serious, until they have to deal with them. It is, after all, emotionally easier to deal with the problems only when you must. This is, however, insufficient. Managing is not about dealing with problems once they become unavoidable. Rather, strategic managing is about surfacing issues and dealing with them before they become problems. To make a new strategy work, the manager needs to demonstrate visibly that he or she is prepared to be intolerant about departures from the strategy. The earlier you deal with problems, the easier it is to tackle them, and the more options you have. The most obvious consequence for non-compliance should be an informal, unscheduled, private offered visit from the manager saying something like, "Mary, it's come to my attention that you're not participating in the team meetings that we agreed to have. Is this accurate? Is there a problem? Is there something I can help you with?" As always in managing, the best approach is to describe the situation and ask for an explanation first. If the person is reluctant to go along, it's possible to ask for help. "Fred, I know this isn't something that you enjoy or that someone with your skills needs, but I really want to help and encourage others in this area, and your participation would carry enormous weight. Would you do it as a favor for me?" Having these kinds of conversations is never easy and takes significant interpersonal skill, particularly when the problem is not yet a serious one. But that's what managing is, and it turns out that's what strategy is. While skill is involved, courage is even more essential. More managers have the skill to conduct these conversations than have the courage to actually engage in them. The manager is never adding as much value as when he or she is influencing individuals to adhere to the agreed-upon strategy. Managing is less about figuring out what should happen than it is about actually making it happen. It should be clear that the more the word gets out that the non-compliance will result in an office visit from the manager, the less often the manager will need to make those visits. People will stay in compliance just to keep you out of their office. A successful manager must not only have the courage to manage, he or she must also have the ability to instill courage in others. The central problem in most companies is that things are pretty good so far. Few companies are hurting badly. And as the old saying goes, the good is the enemy of the best. Why bother stretching for excellence when things are at least acceptable as they are? Do I really want to suffer the rigors of a new diet in order to achieve the uncertain benefits of a new goal? Or in summary, do we really have to do this? It is often said that only two things motivate people, fear and greed. The best managers make use of a third motivating force, the glamorous dream. They are able to convince their colleagues that life could indeed be significantly better, that greater accomplishment is possible, and that yes, they can do it. Great managers give their people the confidence that individually and collectively, greater success, fulfillment, accomplishment, and profits are indeed available. They give people the courage to try, and there's nothing more strategic than that. Change is threatening, and many, if not most people, operate well within their comfort zone, reluctant to abandon old habits that brought them to their current success. If managers are often demanding, they must also be supportive. They must manage with a style that sends the signal, "Come on, you can do it, I'll help you." While the first part of this, "come on," is common enough, The second two, personal encouragement and personal support, are often absent in the styles of many managers. Again, it's necessary to notice that doing this kind of one-on-one management, the only form of management worthy of the name, takes not only skill, but the courage and aptitude to actually do it. Just as management involves a delicate balance between being supportive and being demanding, it also requires a style of insistent patience. Patience that Rome doesn't get built in a day, but insistence that we are building Rome. To find the courage to keep trying to attain new levels of performance, people must believe in their heart of hearts that the manager actually does believe what he or she says about the company's standards, mission, vision, and strategies. We began this whole seminar series talking about diet and exercise programs. Let's revisit that metaphor. We know that to succeed in those areas, none of us change overnight. It truly is like an alcoholic recovery, a process of first make a lifetime commitment, then take it a day at a time. Once we know what the agreed upon diet is, there is nothing more valuable than a skilled coach in leading individuals and teams through the struggle to obtain the goals they have committed to. I've described this process elsewhere. My article, A Great Coach in Action, found on my website, and my book, First Among Equals, both explore this topic in depth. But it's worth reviewing the highlights of what we know about diet and exercise program management here. The key is to manage with a philosophy of, it's okay to stumble. It's only a sin if you don't get back on the program. The primary goal of the beginning stage of a change program is to get people to believe that it's doable and that all we're asking is that they try. This means early successes. All that wise leaders and good trainers talk about is the next small step, and they celebrate like crazy each small accomplishment. They focus on requiring improvement, not on requiring excellence. As long as you're improving, you're with the program and one of us. Managing a weight loss program often means you stop talking about the ultimate goal. If you keep reminding me, David Maister, that I need to lose 50 pounds, it's as likely to backfire and make me give it up as it is to energize me. But if someone said to me, David, let's just focus on losing 1 pound a week. Do you think you could do that? That doesn't sound impossible, does it? My reaction to that will be a lot different. Yes, of course, 1 pound a week is 50 pounds in a year. But thinking of changing a pound a week is something I can absorb. An alcoholic might be daunted by a lifetime of abstinence, but he or she can manage to not drink just for today. Michael Webb, a sales consultant, points out that short-term goals, lose a pound a week, only take on value in the context of principles, which are long-term. First one establishes what is important, and then you get people to do a little of it, a little more, and so on. It's a commitment to a process of continuous improvement on things that matter. Encouragement is an essential ingredient in the recipe. When I began exercising, it was sobering to realize how much I needed my trainer's words. Good, good, David, when I had just been able to complete an exercise for the first time. At one level, I knew I was pathetically bad, but it really did help to hear his constant encouragement. You're doing so much better, David. You might not be able to feel it, but as a trainer, I can see it. I don't know how much of it was him being falsely optimistic, but I am sure it was all a well-practiced mind game. But as every good trainer knows, that's the point. We all need to play mind games with ourselves when we struggle to build new achievements and habits into our lives. If I can just finish this first one, I'll reward myself with a break. Let me just get this first one done. It also means making a game of strategic programs. Educated professionals may scoff, but it's profoundly rooted in the human psyche that if you can make a game of something, it helps to sustain strenuous effort. Hence all of the hoopla of various strategic initiatives such as Six Sigma or Quality is Free and similar fads, business jargon, and prizes, rewards, and black belt recognition programs. There's a reason such things work, even among cynical people. They help to make a mind game of the whole thing, creating a framework on which we hang the mind-distracting habits. If I can do it just this one thing, I can make it. If I can change the way I do that, I'll be able to stick to things. Good trainers know that life-changing improvements can and does fail by rushing to either of two extremes: establishing improvement goals that are too ambitious and fail, or take too long to achieve, leading to frustration and abandonment of the program, or at the other extreme, failing to establish any pressure to improve, allowing people to pretend that they plan to get on the program, but just not today. The good news in all of this is that in the world at large, there is experience in helping people and companies make significant improvement in their lives. There are well-documented methodologies. They're just not the ones we usually associate with the business world. If we're prepared to rethink how we view strategy and business life, then people can achieve things they never thought possible. If I can become a fit, non-smoking exerciser, there's truly no limit. As I've tried to show, with the right coach, we can all achieve amazing things. But ultimately, strategy is not about the great ideas, but about the great managers. This concludes The Courage to Manage, the last episode in my 14-part series, Strategy in Professional Businesses. Today's seminar was based on a chapter in my book, Practice What You Preach, details of which can be found on my website at davidmaister.com. This podcast series is now available for purchase, both as a single episode and as part of a DVD set, from my website, davidmaister.com/store, STORE. I'm also pleased to announce that my forthcoming book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker, is available for pre-order from this same location.